Welcome to the LGBT Community Radio Show on WPKN Radio. We're broadcasting also through WPKN.org. And we have some special guests in our studio. And I'd like to turn it over to our show coordinator, Bonabert, to introduce our guests and begin the conversation.
And he's Andy Ross, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, thank you, Andy. And today the guests are WPKN's own Fran Freed and newly elected Stanford representative Raven
Mathern.
Thank you, Raven.
Thank you.
And it's just really cool to have you folks on today because this is Transgender Awareness Month, and you know, the show really tries to have people from the community come on the show and represent to the community of greater Fairfield County. And so thank you all for being here today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks. Gotta ask, Raven, what possessed you in this day and age to run for an elected official? By the way, again, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Being the first transgender person to win an elected office here in Connecticut.
Thank you so much. I was what you'd consider drafted, to be quite honest. I was telling people when I was out campaigning and canvassing and asking for votes, a year ago, I wasn't even remotely interested in local government or politics in general. I was living under a rock, so to speak, but I was raised in such a way that I believe that if you see a problem, you should do something about it. And I was shown a problem, and I decided to do something about it. And a year later, I'm finding myself still trying to do something about problems.
No, even more so. For the uninitiated, and I did a little homework here, Stanford, their city council is called the Board of Representatives.
Correct.
And Raven, you represent the 29th district.
19th.
The 19th.
Oh, my gosh. We already have enough districts. Don't bring it up to 29.
Okay.
We have 20 districts total. I represent the 19th, which is the part of Stanford that borders New York. So it's the whole northern section, northwest of Stanford.
The Parkway section is pretty much.
Actually, the Merritt Parkway kind of is the southern border of my district. I'm all deep in the woods. It was actually my district before I ran. The incumbent was a Republican that we were running against. So it was an interesting district to try and canvass and get votes in.
But you grew up there.
So. Yes. Oh, yeah. I was born in Pennsylvania, but I was pretty much raised in Stanford my whole life.
Mm-hmm. So you had obviously you had a working understanding of
politics. If I didn't have a working understanding, I wouldn't have felt that I was the person to try to run for the office.
Yeah. No, well, how much convincing? Well, I mean, everything's been pretty new with you. From what I've read, you started your transition earlier this year.
Oh yeah.
So you like took a lot upon yourself.
Oh there, yeah, you know? And it's been an interesting few months. Certainly, I don't know the exact day that I came out, so to speak, but I've been using whether it's politically correct or not. I've been using the day I started hormone therapy as my start date, so to speak. So March 17th is kind of when things really started to get a move on.
Mm-hmm. And for the uninitiated, you identify as non-binary, but use the female pronoun.
Correct. So I identify as non-binary trans. I identify as a trans woman and non-binary. So if you view gender as a spectrum, I see myself as quite solidly 80-85% on the female side. But at the same time, there is undeniably a part of me that is a little masculine right now. So
yeah,
it's hard to not identify as non-binary in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is all part of maybe one of the most encouraging off-year elections in the history of our country.
Don't have to tell me that.
Obviously, it's been a referendum. And, you know, Raven is part of one of the Raven is one part of what has been going on around the country. You know, the most famous, the most notable attention has been drawn in Virginia. Danica Rome becoming the first delegate, the first statewide legislator in the country to from the tribe to be elected. Mm-hmm. And deliciously defeating the author of the
so
bathroom
sweet.
Will. Yes. And yeah, she's become a celebrity very quickly. This past weekend, I'm not one for music awards, but there was a photo of her with Demi Lovato on the red carpet at the American Music Awards Sunday night. So she's there. And then Minneapolis was another huge one. Not just one, but two trans people. Mm-hmm. Andrea Jenkins, the first elected black trans woman in the country in the 8th District in Minneapolis. And she won with like 73% of the vote, which was – so she was pretty solid. And Philippe Cunningham, who won in the 4th Ward in Minneapolis, he won by defeating the incumbent city council president. So, Philippe is not getting as much attention as Andrea, but yeah, that was pretty huge as well. And you play into this as well, being Connecticut's first.
I was going to say, I had no, to be honest, when I started running and announced my campaign and all that stuff, I had a feeling that it might be something, but I was so wrapped up in, not wrapped up, I was thoroughly invested in the changes I was trying to make in my district and in my city, mm-hmm. that the fact that there was something else going on kind of went over my head at times. And I think maybe that has to do with the fact that I just came out. I just came out and never really had the opportunity to really get connected with the community. So for me, it was just this thing that I was going through and then trying to campaign. It wasn't until I started knocking on doors with, you know, in my neighborhood, introducing myself to people that knew me but hadn't seen me in a year or so. And mm-hmm. it was like, oh yeah, by the way, I have a new name and my pronouns are a little bit different.
Yeah.
It was interesting trying to win a local level election like that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, first off, you, just like the other races that that I just alluded to, mm-hmm. It's kind of a strange thing. On one hand, you ran on the issues. You ran on mm-hmm. the everyday issues that people face. In your case, mm-hmm. Taxes and, there are a couple other factors.
Correct.
In your district.
Yeah. In my district, the big thing was really trying to run on message. I did not want to be seen as trying to win because I was a trans person. It's funny. On my literature, I had a bio, and I rewrote that stupid bio at least a dozen times. I lost count. I wrote it again and again, trying to figure out a way to do it that didn't use any pronouns.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to bring it up. I wanted to run on the issues. I didn't want to run on what I was going through. I thought it was petty or I don't know. I was trying to figure it out at the time, yeah. and I'm still trying to figure it out, to be honest. But
yeah.
It ended up being something that had to be addressed because I had a streak when I was knocking doors where at least once a day I was asked, you know, really inappropriate questions about my body and stuff. And mm-hmm. this was, you know, it was one thing when it was the first day.
Yeah.
By the fourth, fifth, sixth day when I'm sitting in my car like, all right, it's time to get started, time to go to work. And knowing that that was ahead of me and that was what I had to face, it made it an interesting challenge. It was like I didn't run because I was trans. I ran in spite of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, you bit off a lot very, very quickly.
I'm very good at that.
Yeah,
I've got a big mouth and I chew quick.
Yeah. Just don't throw up.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, I mean, Danica Rome ran on infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Andrea Jenkins ran on police accountability and other things affecting her district.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other things that affected your district besides taxes that you ran on?
Well, the big thing in my district, I ran with a slate of candidates called Reform Stanford, and there's a website and all that stuff, reformstanford.com.
Is that a formal party or is that just...
No. So we are all, at the time we were running as endorsed Democrats. We are Democrats. We were running because there were a couple of issues in the city that we wanted to take a stand against. The big one was actually development. In downtown Stanford, our population has grown steadily over the years. We're up to about 129,000 people now.
Wow.
Which is awesome. I think growth is a great thing for a city. But now, I don't believe... Yeah, there's always a but. That's why I ran. Unfortunately, I don't believe it's being handled in a responsible way right now. There are tax breaks being given to these large developers, and rather than allowing those tax breaks to expire the way they're supposed to,
mm-hmm.
they get extended. And the net result is that for people like in my district, I'm up in the boondocks. I live up in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
For people in the 19th district, all that growth is great, but we don't really receive services for our property tax, and yet our property taxes continue to rise despite the fact that we feel like we're getting nothing for it. So
mm-hmm.
I think we needed representation within city council to try and push back against that and try and get our property taxes going back to where they should be going, like our infrastructure and things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, on a larger scale, I find that it's kind of strange. Connecticut When people talk about the budget and Dan Malloy and the stuff he's going through, one thing that he's had to deal with that other governors haven't, whether you like him or not, is the fact that there's so much more corporate welfare now. I mean, tax credits.
That's a huge understatement.
Let's just call it corporate welfare. I mean, GE, you know, GE pulling out and going to Boston where they're getting – they got this prime industrial land for nothing. You know, just things like that. They don't have the tax base in Connecticut that they did when I was growing up. I grew up in Prospect where I live now. Now, the whole Naugatuck Valley was industry. The brass industry, the rubber industry, the whole nine yards. All that disappeared in the 70s. And Connecticut really has not found a way to replace that.
No, right. So right now, I mean, the issues we're facing in Stanford is if you were just driving through, you would see it, and it would look like Stanford has grown. We've got all these beautiful buildings popping up everywhere. But unfortunately, it's coming at the cost of the residents that currently live there. Stanford's kind of right now structured in a way that we're looking to attract people at the cost of the residents that are already there. At a certain point, that I believe that point was, you know, way behind us, but it's unsustainable. Yeah. So, I mean,
well, there's also the fact that as the corporations change, just like Fran mentioned with the GE. I remember when GE's corporate headquarters was in. Stamp had moved from Albany to Stamford before it had gone up to Fairfield. Just as they were developing GE Capital, what was the original GE Capital building is now was near what was the headquarters for Olin, and down near Lord and Taylor on Long Ridge Road, which is now a outpatient office in, I think, the Stamford Health Group.
Yep, I drive by it almost every day.
So you've got that, and then you had the growth of USB and RBS, and for the listeners, I only came back to this area 4 years ago now, and I had been away for almost 40 years. So the change in the growth for me was just totally amazing, and I don't know. They've brought the companies in, and this is the big thing, corporate welfare, what corporations get at the expense of the people, but the developers are doing all this building, but the jobs are starting to leave because GE not just moved their corporate headquarters. For Stanford, the impact was they sold off capital, and the large portion of it is owned by Synchrony. But how many jobs were lost? Synchrony didn't keep a lot of the jobs there. They only kept it part of the office. Mm-hmm. So there's the job loss as well.
Yeah, right. I mean, and the one thing I've had this conversation before, the one thing I like to try to delineate is my stance between developers and landowners versus big business. I think I look, for example, the UBS deal when the tax breaks left and they up and left as well. I always point out there were no winners in that deal. Stanford lost, UBS lost, everybody lost, unfortunately. And it was because the economy went down. I think right now we need to have policies in place where when we give bids to try and attract large businesses, that it doesn't become a race to the bottom. It's really easy to put in the lowest bid and get the people to come, but you have to make sure you're putting plans in place that these things that you're doing are sustainable. And right now, I don't believe that's happening.
Hmm. You know, I wanted to ask you because, this is the LGBTQ community show. Now, Stanford, I viewed this from 3,000 miles away because I was living out in California at the time, back 6 years ago. I moved back in 2012, but I was watching with a very keen eye Connecticut moving the anti-discrimination law through the state assembly, and you know Dan Malloy obviously signed the bill, but. Part of it was, a lot of it was generated in Stanford. Malloy had been the mayor of Stanford before becoming governor, and his former corporation counsel in Stanford had transitioned, so that probably had a lot to do with it. I'm not sure how much of the history you knew about it.
I'll be, quite honest, I view myself as a very much a newcomer to the LGBT community. Yeah. I only came out in March, and all of my efforts been put into my city, not myself, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it'll come.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not worried about that part.
Yeah. So I wanted to get back to something you were saying before. Now, I mean, I took baby steps when I came out in a very red state part of the world, out in Fresno. back my epiphany was 10 years ago, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? But you know, I took a lot of little baby steps. You encountered people asking you ridiculous things right off the bat. How much? I mean, you're a marathoner and you're a martial artist, and I mean, you were in physical activities that involved some sort of aggression and some sort of being out front. And I was wondering how much of that personality of yours worked its way into both your transition and your political career that's just starting.
Oh, I think there's no denying that it played a role in it. I've always kind of lived by the saying, you know, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. So I've decided I'm going to do it. So what's the point? I might as well do it well. 99% is still 1% shy of getting there. So I've been called extremist. I've been called being told I see things as black and white. And the way I like to explain it, it's not that I see things as black and white. There are definitely shades of gray, but I'm very good at putting where my personal line is down the middle and knowing where I stand on things. Mm-hmm. When it came to transitioning, it was... when I was trying to keep it in the closet, mm-hmm. gosh darn it, I was going to keep it in the closet. When it came to a point where there was just no way it could be denied, there was no way that I could continue going on to live the way I had, then, well, there's no way that I could continue to live the way I had. It was time to go for it, so I'm going for it.
Now you had no political experience, so how? And you said you were drafted into this by probably somebody from Reform Stanford.
Yeah, long-time friend. I had a long-time friend, Nina Sherwood, who is amazing. She's a political dynamo. I had been going to the gym with her for over a decade, and I've always been very, obviously I've been fairly liberal, and I've always, she's recognized that I'm the type of person that if I'm willing to commit to something, I know what it means to commit to something.
Yeah.
So I think she was trying to see if I had any interest, and it only took one question for me to say, yeah, I'll be interested. And then the next week I was staying up till 2 a.m. doing research on the board and trying to figure out exactly what it was. And I was hooked. There was, at that point, I had to pursue it, which I, to be honest, I wish more people took that kind of prerogative because initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I've been describing local government right now as atrophied. Mm-hmm. There were districts that were uncontested because there weren't people running, which blows my mind as a newcomer to the scene. What do you mean nobody ran in this district? What do you mean? Isn't that shouldn't there be a line of people wanting to run?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I've been calling it, here's a great example. When I was out knocking doors, I was up near the New York border of Stanford, and I knocked on one gentleman's door, and he said, you have my vote. Now, what's your name and who are you? Because no one had reached out. Local government is atrophied in this area. It's people just aren't engaged. So I think right now the job of people that have now been elected has to be to reach out. It can't be to sit back and hope your constituents come to you with their problems. You need mm-hmm. to go out and find out what the problems are. I mean, we're representatives. Isn't that what representing is supposed to be?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's part of a very small but subtle sea change that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the presidential election last year, it was more of trying to liberalize from the top down. Or not liberalize. I mean, I caught more crap from Clinton fans than I did from Trump fans. but what I'm saying is, it all goes back to the old axiom: all politics is local. And what you're seeing is maybe some of it's inspired by Bernie Sanders, maybe some of it's inspired by.
I think so.
But you're seeing a lot more politics being local.
For
and
sure,
grassroots.
The way it needs to be. I think it's. I'm not the only one that stood up out of nowhere. Our board has 15 newcomers now. In the city of Stanford, our board of representatives has 40 people on it, and 15 of them are first-time politicians. We had I'm getting noticed for other reasons, but we have a lot of brand-new faces on the board, and I think that's what it should be. We had people that were in their seats for decades that simply weren't challenged. And I think that I don't think there's anything wrong with someone being in a seat for decades. I think there is an issue with them being in a seat unchallenged and unchecked for decades. That's mm-hmm. when the system starts to fall apart. So
Yeah, I mean, I lived in New Haven for a long time. Yeah, it's been a one-party system for like about 65 years now.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah,
and I live in a town where the mayor just got his was elected to his 21st term. Most times, you know, Mayor Bob runs unopposed, this year. But yeah, it was. You know, I'm just really one thing I'm curious about, because there's so much division now in our country. I mean, you see in Congress, there's no way the two sides are going to work together on this.
No, we're way too polarized.
It's a fight to the death.
Which is unfortunate, because if no one works together, then no one ever gets anything done.
Well, let me ask you, you know, since you've been elected, I mean, have you done some coalition building on your part, or like talking to people from other districts?
Yes. So, I mean, the one benefit to the slate that I ran on with Reform Stanford is that we are, you know, we're still working together. Just because we all got elected doesn't mean, okay, mission's over, we're all elected, we'll go sit in our seats now and do the same thing everyone else was doing.
Now comes the work.
Yeah, now comes the work. My energy has gone from anxious to excited, because I can't wait to get to work. Work is not something I've ever been afraid of. I've got plenty of fears, but hard work, not even close to that list.
Cool. And your term starts January 1st, right?
So it's funny. We're still trying to figure out exactly when all that starts. This is the issue.
Don't let them know.
Yeah. I don't know if any of them know sometimes. It's been confusing to try and get a straight answer. But one thing I do know that I think has been kind of interesting is on December 4th is the first board meeting of the new board, and it will be the 30th board. December 4th is also my birthday, and it'll be my 30th birthday.
Oh, cool.
So it was like, I thought it was a unique little loop around.
Yeah. I was going to say, back in my day, they said, don't trust anybody over 30, so you're in trouble now.
Oh, goodness. Hey, I'm still trustworthy. Literally right up until I get elected to the board, apparently.
There you go. Is that a job description?
Oh, God, I hope not.
This is, by the way, if you're just tuning in, this is the LGBTQ community show that airs the fourth Wednesday of every month on WPKN. And Andy Ross is sitting in front of me, and Bonna Bird is sitting across from me. She's the they're the co-hosts. I'm just taking up space behind the console. I'm Fran Fried, who used to be on PKN a long time ago. And just when I thought I was out, they brought me back in. And we're sitting here talking with Raven Mathern, who was just elected to Stanford's Board of Representatives and is the first out trans politician to win a seat on any level in Connecticut. So, yeah, and
we're going to take a break, and we're going to play something by Jennifer Maidman.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good enough. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to the LGBTQ Community Show on WPKN. I'm Fran Fried, filling in as a special guest interviewer with Bonna and Andy this afternoon, talking to Raven Mathern, one of the newly elected representatives of the city of Stamford and the first out trans politician to ever be elected to an office in Connecticut. And
Still just sounds so surreal.
Well, there is something weird about it. You know, I mean, I'm not tooting my horn because I lost, but, you know, I was only the third person in the tribe to make it to Jeopardy not too long
huge.
Ago.
That's huge. That's incredible.
And it's like, you know, you're...
Listen, I would have made it way less further in Jeopardy.
Hey, it took me four times around with the audition. But, you know, what I'm saying is on the day-to-day, you know, it's like, because I've been out publicly full-time since about 2009 now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I'm out in the everyday non-trans world, and it's no big deal. And I've been hired four times and laid off three times since then. It had nothing to do with gender identity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so Jeopardy on that certain level, it was just a larger version of me playing in my living room. Mm-hmm. And it was no big thing, except it was a big thing. And in the whole trans scheme of things, yeah, it was pretty damn huge.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this was a game show. You're talking about politics and decisions that make everybody, you know, mm-hmm. sit up and take notice. And, mm-hmm. I mean, seriously impacts people's lives.
For sure. Certainly. I mean, that's why it's so important. If it wasn't so important, I wouldn't have taken it as seriously as I did and am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now I feel like the biggest thing is that we need more positive trans representation in the media. I'm not the type of person to like the spotlight. I am terrified of public speaking. I stutter and stammer. It's not my thing. But
I don't hear you stuttering or stammering.
Oh, I hear every stutter and every stammer. but right now, there wasn't anyone that looked like me to look up to.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I mean, recently we've had a couple of trans people, beautiful actresses that are great role models for the trans community, for trans women specifically in the trans community.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, unfortunately, that right now the idea that's pushed across is that trans people are either okay to joke about, that we're either the brunt of the joke, or if you want to be accepted as a trans person, you can, but you have to put on high heels and lipstick. And like I've always joked around, I've kind of always had a rule that if I couldn't run three miles in it, I wouldn't wear it. And high heels are not great running clothes.
No, not at all. Well, you know, I mean, I've experienced this on my personal level where, you know, when I had my epiphany, it would be 10 years ago, January, there really wasn't, when I was confronted with this, the inner voice confronted me and I couldn't get away from it. Mm-hmm. I started trying to find information on the web and there was next to no information. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, there were cross-dressers guides and all that.
I've poured through all the same websites.
Yeah. And really 10 years ago, there was, despite the fact that we had a web, there was really nothing out there. I mean, I took it upon myself to do a lot of blog writing. I have a blog called Franorama World that I used to do a lot of writing in, especially during the transition, to help people understand what I was going through and, you know, understand that, you know, I'm just like you except for one little thing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is nowadays it's – I mean, I won't say it's a lot easier because, hell, it's a tough thing to do. And you're experiencing this now, and you know you're
that's an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, you started with the hormones; it's a second adolescence for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and adolescences don't last. Except there are you're going to encounter people, even in the tribe, especially in the tribe, who are kind of like Heathers, you know, and you know, talking about the whole glamming out thing. You know, Levert,
which I don't think there's anything wrong with.
Not
for nothing. I mean, a year ago, if you told me I would be where I am now, I would have laughed in your face because a year ago I believe I was sporting a full beard, trying to really pass for male as hard as I could.
Yeah.
From there to now, there's been such a difference that for me to say from now till the next year, who knows? Maybe in a year I want to wear dresses and high heels. And if that's the case, so be it. Awesome.
I mean, I'd like it
there needs to be that kind of freedom that I think we're just getting to the point where people are understanding gender identity, but they're still not being able to find the delineation between gender identity and gender presentation. Because my gender identity is, I mean, as I described earlier, I know where my gender identity is. My presentation, I mean, I'm still wearing all of my, I hesitate to call them old men's clothes because I don't want to throw them away, but I'm still wearing the same men's jeans and men's shirts and everything. Well, I had to throw a sports bra underneath it, but
I mean, I would wear a Boston Marathon shirt if I ran the marathon.
Well, fair enough. Yeah. I love this shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I still have my old Saints jerseys, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. And I actually wore one out to Dunkin' Donuts last week, you know. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, there's a certain, I mean, we're different. We have a pretty wide age difference. You're 29, I'm 56. Spiritually going on 30, but you know, still, the job world thinks I'm 75. But
I was going to say, I'm 29, but sometimes I feel like spiritually I'm going on 60 with everything I keep taking on.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there seems to be, and, you know, I mean, having been part of the media for like 30 years with newspapers and doing shows here and online, you know, there seems to be an emphasis on the beautiful and the glamorous and the young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's face it, I'm an overweight 56-year-old trans woman who's trying to lose 100 pounds and, you know, just confronted seeing my fat self on television, you know, like 9 million
really fabulous,
people.
Actually.
Oh, well, thank you. but I'm just saying that, you know, I'm not of the beautiful sort of thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, whether we over rely on image sometimes.
See, I would flip the other way. I don't think that we as the trans community rely on image so much as the way the rest of media tries to portray us. Because for them, they view the switch, the switch from transitioning from male to female as this superficial visual thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, when I describe the effects of hormones to people, the biggest ones weren't my body, it was my brain. My mind finally felt at peace.
Yeah.
I didn't have testosterone racing through it. I my brain was finally working the way it was supposed to for once.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of effect that matters, not, oh, you look so pretty. It's, oh, I feel so right, finally.
Yeah. I mean, I like the doll up. You know, spiritually, I was always one of the girls, you know? But, you know, there are a couple of schools of thought with the hormones. Yeah, I mean, they cleared up about 35 years of chronic depression like that.
Yeah.
and two, that was my way of explaining it to my father, finally. You know, I had I came out to my folks in September of 2009. And I had about 14 months of weirdness between me and my family. And I didn't have to see him more than like a couple weeks a year because I was living 3,000 miles away. But but my father was really having a hard time with it. And we had a good long talk, the longest talk we ever had. It was like about 40 minutes on the phone. And I explained to him a second time, look, this has nothing to do with me wanting to flounce around in a dress.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I said, look, I've been on hormones since April. This was November, like right around this time of year. And I said, yeah, I've been on hormones since April. And just, I told, like, just what I told you about the depression. And I heard the light bulb go off in his head. He was going through his first go around with prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. And they got it early that time around. This couple of years ago, they didn't get it. But this time, the first time around, he all of a sudden he goes to me, you know, I've been on hormones, female hormones. I'm like, what? Yeah. And it yeah, turns out they give you estrogen to shrink the prostate.
Yep. Yep.
And I was able to relate it to my father in a medical term and something that he could understand, that there's something, there's a physical element about it.
I feel for most people that aren't trans or don't, for anyone that doesn't have any gender issues, I feel like it's easy to sweep it under the rug and to not have the perspective to see it. The way I've tried to describe it to my friends, it's a little bit like a braided cord, like your gender is this rope. Mm-hmm. If all the ropes are the same color, you perceive it to be one rope. So if you're straight, if you're cis, it's one rope to you. But if one strand is a different color, like if that white rope has a single yellow strand, that yellow strand sticks out. And all of a sudden, it's really obvious that rope is really a braided cord.
Mm-hmm.
For people that, for me personally, with my gender identity issue that I've been going through, it illuminates that one chord bright yellow, and it becomes very obvious what everything is in that sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been trying to find the right way to describe it to people, but I as I've been doing it, I'm realizing it's a centuries-old question that I'm trying to find the answer to, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't view trans as like one whole community, because there have been...
Certainly. It's definitely... I view it as kind of an umbrella term for everyone that falls underneath it, because... Mm-hmm. We are viewed by the rest of society to be one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if there's ever going to be any change, that has to be addressed. And if that has to be addressed, then we should do it together anyways.
Yeah. I mean, because I experienced this in San Francisco, where I thought I was going to end up, you know, back then. And I was treated much better by the non-trans world than I was by LGB and especially T groups. And basically, there's only one common bond that binds us, and then, you know, everything else is kind of gravy. If my friends who are trans are my friends for the same reason as my friends who aren't trans. Mm-hmm. We're not all. I mean, I call it our dysphoric tribe, but you know, I mean, there's that's kind of a problem. I see that we all need to work together, but at the same time, we don't have a lot that's keeping us tied together.
Well, and I can only speak to my own limited experiences having just come out. I viewed as someone who has struggled to connect with the community, I view it as a shared common problem. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I was campaigning with my slate, there was a conversation amongst everybody about, you know, let's all get shirts made and we'll stand in front of City Hall and have a conversation, do like a press release, something of that nature. And they were talking about getting white T-shirts made up with a Reform Stanford logo on. Sounds awesome. Sounds innocent. I was desperately struggling to find a way to suggest to them that maybe we don't do just plain white T-shirts, because at that time my chest was leaking from hormones. That's not something that I can talk to a straight cis person about and they'll really understand. Yeah. Where that's at least someone who maybe they don't have gender identity issues, maybe they don't have dysphoria, maybe it's just my gay friend. But at least it's somebody who has had a little bit more experience with people like me or with people like us, that they're slightly more sympathetic ear than most, if that makes sense. So for me, it's been a desperate need for a safe haven. Mm-hmm. So if I could be so picky as to say, yes, me and all my trans women friends, that would be great. But that's not the case, and nor do I think that's a great goal to have. I think the trans community really should come together.
Yeah.
And the LGBT community in general should come together.
Yeah, I mean, I made a conscious decision when I came out, because there was there's nothing to really there. I didn't know anybody in Fresno, which is a very, very red state area of about 500,000. I didn't know anybody. And it's like, I knew to a certain extent I was going to have to go through this alone.
Yeah.
Although my friends were fantastic, you know, lots of open arms, literally and figuratively, but I knew that there really wasn't a community. Now, I mean, there's a trans support group out there, a trans advocacy group called Trans Emotion out in Fresno. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty active in the community at large. And yeah, I mean, now there's that stuff, but people, and Connecticut's a very populous place. So
it is, but I don't think there's nearly the amount of support that there needs to be in Connecticut. Having just been someone who just came out and actively went through the process of trying to connect and not finding the resources that I expected or hoped to find, that it's difficult for me to say, oh, wow, this is great. I went through this 2 months ago. You know, like I just went through all this. There's just not enough support right now. There's not a strong enough system in place for someone who's trans or questioning to come out and answer the questions that they've been asking themselves for years.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you have a point. There are, as far as healthcare goes, as far as mental health care goes.
Oh yeah. And in that regard, in healthcare, I actually got incredibly lucky. I found a gender therapist that I worked very well with. I found a primary care physician that I worked incredibly well with. I got the medical resources that I needed right up front. Mm. I was incredibly lucky and privileged in that regard. In terms of the friend or person to talk to that would be able to relate, it was a wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's really why the LGBT community needs more presence in the area.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I can only speak from my relatively new experiences.
We only have like about 4 minutes left to the show, which is terrible. Time flies when you're having
fun. Oh my gosh, did it? Wow.
And I didn't know. I mean, I didn't want to monopolize the entire conversation. But
more than that, I'm sorry that we didn't get to talk to you about your time on Jeopardy. I mean, that was such a dynamic event for you.
Well, I'll make it really quick. I lost by a series of wacky circumstances after leading the show almost for the entire thing. And I was up $8,000 after my opponent, the second place guy, blew a $4,000 daily double question. And all of a sudden, with four clues left, the producer stopped the show. They conferred, and they said, yeah, we're going to give him the answer. And all of a sudden, we ended up in a dead heat. And I ended up having to bet all in on a category that I had no right betting on, Asian geography. And gist of it was all three of us got it wrong, but the defending champ, who lagged behind the whole show, bet all but a dollar, and so he won with a dollar. I technically was given second place, so I made $1,999 more dollars than the guy who won. You know, but it was it left me totally gobsmacked because I wanted to be a 5-time champ, and my whole life, you know, and but the thing was, it was a very humbling experience, but in two totally different ways. One, the way I lost. And two, just the outpouring that I received before and after the show aired. I mean, it was like this weird media crush. I'm not used to being the one, you know, being asked the questions, you know? And, soon it was like the Hartford Current, which blared CT transgender activist to be on Jeopardy. I'm like, no, I just have a little thing on my Facebook page saying accidental civil rights activist, you know? I learned about agendas. I'd forgotten all about agendas. But, Patch, Channel 8, you know, all this, all these people were – and my one of my old poker buddies in Fresno did a story with me. Yeah, it was kind of, you know, just the outpouring from people, friends, townspeople, and Prospect, I mean, which was – you know, I mean, I was not happy with Prospect when I left when I was a kid. I was pretty much abused there. And people there now, they're really behind me, which I was like, holy cow.
That's
awesome. Guess things have changed. But yeah, I mean I didn't get the money out of it, you know, but I did get some intrinsic rewards that intangible rewards that you can't buy, you know. So
I was going to say, I can't imagine the experience of getting to go through that. That's so cool.
Yeah, so that's been my excitement. I guess that falls into Trans Awareness Month. And I actually asked one of the contestant crew how, best I could figure, I was only the third out trans person to ever make it to the show. And she said, yeah, you're right. But, you know, we have to tell you, we didn't even talk about it. We didn't discuss it at all. It had nothing to do with you being on the show.
That's
awesome. We loved you. You had a wonderful personality, and that's why we had you. So, you know, on one hand, yeah, it's a huge thing. On the other hand, we're supposed to be working for the day when being trans is no big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of a weird dichotomy right now.
Well, it's so cool to get to both. I mean, it kind of stinks for this time frame because now it's, you have to push through the struggles that are still there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, recognize that things are getting a little bit better too. It's interesting. That's really cool to have that experience.
Yeah. But I would like to take whatever platform I have or whatever notoriety I have and work towards what you're doing, which is something political.
I'm biased. I think everybody should. I think if everybody was more engaged in government at all levels, then we'd have a government that did a better job representing everybody at all levels. So.
Yeah. I mean, where I am, though, in Prospect, part of New Haven County, part of the 3rd District, but, you know, I'm in a town that's very Republican and a legislative district that's very Republican, but I'm also in...
It's Republican until enough Democrats stand up.
But congressionally, I'm in Rosa DeLauro's district. And Rosa's not going to give up her seat until she they wheel her out and, you know, Her mom was 104 when she died this year. So Rose is going to be around for a while.
Oh, goodness.
But I guess we're just about at the end of the show, right?
Right. We've got a couple more minutes, and I'm going to let Andy read the events that he always...
So some events coming up for the future would be Wednesday, November 29th, 7 p.m. There's a movie called The Normal Heart. It's at the Movie Heart, the movie night at Triangle Community Center's drop-in space in Norwalk. And then there's also a James Baldwin celebration Saturday, December 2nd, 4:30 p.m., Unitarian Universalist Church, Westport, Connecticut. And then Tuesday, December 5th, the Triangle Transgender Society has adult transgender support, 7 p.m., and they repeat that on December 19th, 7 p.m. And this is another one, RUSA LGBT Russian-speaking LGBT, that's the association.
In New York City.
In New York City, November 29th. And some overnights coming out dialogues. And at Congregation Best.
Biet Simcha Torah CBST at 130 West 30th Street, New York, New York. I just thought that this was pretty interesting to find this group on Facebook because of all the problems that the LGBT community is facing in Russia right now, mm-hmm. and that it would be a very interesting group to help support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not just Russia now. The Ankara, Turkey, the capital of Turkey yesterday, or Sunday, outlawed any LGBT demonstrations.
That's going to be very scary because until Erdogan, just another political side note to throw in here, Turkey and Israel had a good relationship, believe it or not. And it's a very scary thing what's going on over there. I also wanted to add some very interesting musical notes. The band Against Me, whose guitarist, Laura Jane Grace, is transgender. And the album Transgender Dysphoria Blues is a really good album, as well as Jennifer Merriman, whose latest album is Dreamland, and people may have known her back in the day when she was with as Ian Maiden
Maiden
Man with Penguin
Cafe Orchestra.
Thanks. Yeah. So, and then there is the book Becoming Nicole. That is just a really dynamic book out there that I really been reading, and I think everybody should really read because it goes through a family's dynamic of how their identical twin sons progressed, and one of their children and Nicole
In Maine.
Nicole, they, like I said, identical twins, and how Nicole from a very young age had. Wanted to be a girl. And so.
And she's only like 19 now, as it is. Yeah,
18, exactly. 19. And so I'd like to thank Fran and Raven for being here.
Oh,
and of course,
so
Andy for letting me take over the show as usual.
I want to thank you guys for letting us take over the show.
Again, this is a dynamic show. And thank you. Thank you so very much. And everybody
thank you,
have
Bonna.
A great week and a very happy Thanksgiving from the WPKN LGBT Community Radio Show. Thanks a lot. Bye now.